Hello, and thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. Today's message is presented by Ken Holsberry, the preaching minister at the 10th and Broad Church. Let's tune in now for Ken's message.
We're going to talk about following Jesus and being a disciple in Matthew. Becoming disciples of Jesus is a little like getting married in this way. Because when you marry a person, you marry into their family. And we become a disciple of Jesus. We become a part of his family. I used to preach a premarital series, and I love the title of this series. It was called How to Avoid Marrying a Jerk. Now, don't look over at your spouse if you think that is an appropriate title or anything like that. One of the chapters in the series was on this reality that when you marry a person, you marry their family. And I love the way they titled this chapter. It was called, You Can't Marry Jethro Without Getting the Clampets. If you remember the Beverly Hillbillies, that reference has a little more meaning to you. But it made me think that poor Paula, when she married me, she got the clampets. Because I remember the first time that she went back home with me after we were married into the woods in East Texas. And as we went into my mama and papa's house, she literally had to go around the dead deer that was hanging on the back porch as she went into the door. And I had a family member, we called her Aunt Sister, and Aunt Sister had grown up in the backwoods and had never left the backwoods. And she honestly, she was hard to understand. And I still remember the day that we had been at my mama and papa's. We had been with Aunt Sister. Paula got in the car and she said, I know I am a part of the family now. And I said, why is that, dear? And she said, because I actually understood what Aunt Sister said today. So when you marry Jethro, you marry the Clampets. When you marry Ken, you marry the Hillbillies. And when you marry Jesus, when you become a part of Jesus, you become a part of his family. And so today we are going to begin. We began in Matthew last week by going to the middle of Matthew. Today we're going to go to the beginning and we're going to look at the genealogy and look at the family of Jesus. We're going to be in Matthew, but that song reminds me of Hebrews. And in Hebrews chapter 11, there's a list that includes so many of those who are in the family of Jesus, who are going to be in this genealogy that we're going to read, or we're going to talk about this morning. And that song is a testament to them and to us that we have come this far by faith. And it is by faith and faith alone that we are saved. And so God bless you as you go through this week and this month and this year, and as you stand firm and stand strong in your faith in Jesus Christ. Because we are disciples of Jesus Christ and we are part of his family. And that's how Matthew begins. And it's really not a very gripping, engaging beginning. The genealogy, I won't put you on the spot. But I dare say that some of you, as you began, you know, your commitment to read through the New Testament this year, to read through Matthew, you might have had a little bit of a hard time getting through. You may have even skipped altogether this genealogy as Matthew begins the gospel of Jesus. Because even people who are interested in their own genealogy kind of get bleary-eyed when someone else wants to talk about their genealogy. Family is important to us, but we don't identify ourselves as much by family. We identify ourselves by so many other things, our job, our rank, our education. But in so many cultures, and especially in this Jewish culture that Jesus came into when he came into the world, family was absolutely important. It was the identity, and it was important to know your genealogy and to know those family ties. And the family that Jesus was born into wasn't just any family. It was the chosen family. It was the chosen people. And this line, these ancestors, this line is full of incredibly important, significant people that God used in world-changing ways for thousands of years. But there's not anyone in the family who's more significant than Jesus. So Matthew begins his gospel and he uses this genealogy so that we can see, so that we can know some really important things about Jesus. This is how Matthew introduces Jesus. And so the first thing the genealogy does, and if you want to follow along in your journal and take some notes and do some underlining, the very first thing that genealogy does is it shows us who Jesus is. Now, Mark is more succinct. Mark just makes a statement at the beginning. And Matthew does too, but he does it in the context of this genealogy. And he's going to, as he tells us who Jesus is, Matthew's going to highlight two specific ancestors. He highlights those in verse 1. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David and the son of Abraham. And so in your journal, let's highlight those names and talk about what they teach us about the identity of Jesus. Abraham is the first one. Abraham is the father. We sing the little song about Father Abraham. That is Abraham's main identity. He is a father of an entire family, of an entire nation, of this chosen people of God. And God called this one man, Abraham. He called him. He told him to go, and Abraham went, and through Abraham, he built this family. And there's so much drama that goes into that story as God keeps making these promises to Abraham about this family, yet Abraham and Sarah don't have children until finally the promised son is born when Abraham's 100 years old. But through this one man, God is going to build this family, and he's going to build this nation. And it is through Abraham that God promises to bless the whole world. Our first introduction to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, we read this promise. The Lord said to Abraham, "Leave your country, your family, your relatives, and you go to the land that I will show you. I will bless you, and I will make your descendants into a great nation. You will become famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless anyone who blesses you, but I will put a curse on anyone who puts a curse on you. Everyone," listen to what God says, "everyone on earth will be blessed because of you." That's a promise that God makes to Abraham in his very first call, that through Abraham, every single person on earth is going to be blessed. And by tracing Jesus' family line back to Abraham, Matthew is identifying Jesus as that blessing. It is through Jesus that everyone in the whole world will be blessed. That's the first thing that Matthew lets us know about Jesus as he walks us through this genealogy. So that's Abraham, but then there's David. That's the second descendant, the second name. Jesus is the son of David. David was Israel's greatest king. He was the man after God's own heart. He was the one who wrote so many of the Psalms. He was just a great man, a great king, a great ruler. And through David, God promised, for Abraham, he promised a blessing to the whole world. Through David, he promised that he would raise up a good king. So often the Bible uses the word righteous. He's going to raise up a good king who will rule and reign as king forever. That's the promise that God made to David in 2 Samuel chapter 7. "David, this is what I, the Lord all-powerful, say to you. I brought you in from the fields where you took care of sheep, and I made you the leader of my people. Wherever you went, I helped you and destroyed your enemies right in front of your eyes. I have made you one of the most famous people in the world. I will make sure that one of your descendants will always be king." And by tracing Jesus' family line back to David, Matthew is identifying Jesus as that king. So in this genealogy, we're seeing who Jesus is. He is the one who has been promised. He's the one who will bless the whole world. He is the one who reigns as the good and righteous King. So from the very first page, we find out about Jesus and who he is. And what is the significance for us as disciples, as we follow Jesus with Matthew? What is significant about this? And here's what I want to say about that, that as a disciple, it is absolutely vital that you know who Jesus is. Not that you know who I say that Jesus is. Not that you know who your parents or your grandparents say that Jesus is. Not that you know who your friends say that Jesus is. It is absolutely vital that you, in your own mind and in your own heart and in your own soul, know who Jesus is. And if you're going to be his disciple, that you come to the place that you accept him for who he is. And that you be ready to confess him for who he is. Later on, Jesus is going to look his disciples in the eye and he's going to say, well, who do other people say that I am? And they have an answer. But then he asks the important question, but who do you say that I am? And as a disciple, we've got to be ready to answer that question. Who do you say that Jesus is? Because as a disciple, our whole lives, our whole world, everything in our lives is going to resolve around this person of Jesus that Matthew is introducing us to. So that's the first thing. This genealogy shows us who Jesus is, his identity. The second thing that this genealogy shows us is that something significant has happened in history. Something has happened. And it's happened in history. Jesus is an historical figure. He can trace his lineage back to people who actually lived and who actually breathed in history. He came into this world at a moment in history. And that time can be marked. It can be marked by people. It can be marked by events. It can be marked by political leaders. And some of the other gospels mark it in that way. Here's what's so important about this. And here's what this genealogy helps us see. That this is a moment in time. And this is a real person in history. That Jesus is not a myth shrouded in mystery. Jesus is a person revealed in history. I want to say that again because I want you to remember that. Jesus is not a myth who is shrouded in mystery. Jesus is a person who is revealed in history. And we follow him. We don't follow an idea. We don't follow a doctrine. I don't even come up with any more words at this moment. We follow a person, and his name is Jesus, and he alone can lead us to God the Father, who from the beginning wanted to bless us and lead us with a King who is good. Hallelujah. We learn that in this genealogy. And men and women in this family of Abraham longed for him to come. They longed for him to come. They prayed for his coming. They had ceremonies and traditions that all pointed to this promise that this one was going to come. And you'll notice in this genealogy, there are three sections. This first one is about Abraham, or starts with Abraham. The second one then starts with David. Then the third one doesn't start with a name, but it starts with a moment. It says, then the exile. The exile happened in 586 BC, before Christ, when the Babylonian Empire destroyed Jerusalem and carried the Jews into captivity. Again, all of these things are things that happened in history. They can be marked. They are known. They are observed and happened. The Jews were taken into Babylon. And in that exile, they lost their identity in so many ways. They lost their identity as a nation. They lost their king. And so more than ever in those years after the exile, they longed for the one who would come as the son of Abraham and is the son of David, the one who would fulfill the promises, the one who would be the blessing, the one who would be the king. And they waited and they waited, and at a moment in time, God acted. And God and God alone decided when that moment would be. Just like God and God alone will decide when the time is for Jesus to come again, He decided when Jesus would come the first time. Romans chapter 5 says, at just the right time. Galatians chapter 4 says, and when the time had fully come, God sent Jesus into the world. And so Jesus coming in the flesh was a moment in time where God intervened in the world in a dramatic way to fulfill a plan and to keep a promise that He had made thousands of years before to bless the whole world. And the genealogy reminds us who Jesus is and that He came, and it was a moment in history that changed the world. And the genealogy also shows us that Jesus is the one who fulfills the destiny of His family. He fulfills the destiny of this entire family, this nation that God chose to work through. Israel was God's chosen people. And that didn't mean He didn't love other nations and other people. It means that this nation was the one through whom He was going to love and He was going to bless. And they were nothing without God. He didn't choose them because they were famous or powerful or wise or rich. They were slaves in Egypt when He called them out and formed them into a nation. He's the one who made them His chosen people. And He had a plan that He had in place. And Jesus is the one who fulfilled that plan. He's the one who fulfilled that destiny of this family. And in doing so, He expanded the family. And I am so thankful that He did. He fulfilled the destiny of His family by coming to them first. Many times in Jesus' ministry, He says something like that He has come first to the house of Israel. He's come first to the people of Israel. Because those were the people to whom the promises were first made. They were the ones that the promises were going to come about through. And so Jesus came to them first. But Jesus not only fulfilled the destiny of that family, He expanded that family. Because just as the original promise to Abraham said the whole world would be blessed, John chapter 3 verse 16 says Jesus came for the whole world. For God so loved Israel that He gave His one and only Son. That's not what it says. For God so loved the whole world that He sent His only Son. Paul is going to say later in Romans that this good news about Jesus has the power to save Jews and Gentiles. And we're the Gentiles. We're the other folks. We're the folks that God expanded and added to the family through Jesus. When we read through Acts, one of the significant things we see in Acts is this story of these first disciples who went to make more disciples like Jesus had told them to do. And first of all, they did go to the Jews, but very quickly God led them to the rest of the world. And He expanded His family. And Jesus uses this language of family. Very often when He talks about His disciples, he calls us brothers. He calls us sisters. He calls us God's children. And He uses images very often that give us this sense of bringing people together, which is what Jesus was doing as He expanded the family. He's always a shepherd gathering sheep. He's a farmer gathering grain. He's a fisherman gathering fish. He's a mother hen gathering her chicks. He's a builder gathering a church. And so being a disciple of Jesus means that we are now part of a people. We are part of a community. We are part of a family that has been formed by and through and because of Jesus, who is the son of Abraham, who is the son of David, who is the blessing, and who is the king. And we see all that in this genealogy. Who Jesus is, what happened in history, how He fulfilled His destiny. And so again, the question is, what does that mean for us? We're disciples. We're following Jesus along with Matthew. What does that mean for us if Jesus is who Matthew says he is? If Jesus has done in history what Matthew said he has done, if we have indeed become a part of God's family like Matthew claims, for the disciple it means that everything in our lives now is wrapped up in Jesus. Everything in our lives revolves around Jesus. That he has a story, and it is history. It is his story, and our individual stories get wrapped up in his story. And his story is so much bigger than my story. His story is so much bigger than your story. It is grander. It is the work of God in the world. And so when we become a disciple, we're now a part of something new. And his agenda becomes our agenda. His desires become our desires. His ways become our ways. His will becomes our will. His plan becomes our plan. And as we go into Matthew chapter 2, we see two really good examples of this. We see it in the wise men, and we see it in Joseph. The wise men lived in a faraway place. They were looking for this promised king. They were reading God's words. They were reading the signs. And they saw a star, and they believed, and they followed that star, and it took them to Bethlehem. On their way, they met King Herod, who lied to him and said he wanted to know more about the king, so come back and tell me later. But these wise men left everything that was familiar. They left everything that was comfortable. They left home and safety and family. And they pressed forward tenaciously to find this king and to honor and worship him. And then after they found him, instead of obeying that order from Herod to return to him, they obeyed an order from God to go home by a different route. What the wise men did is they changed their course. And we're going to see that same thing in Joseph as a disciple. Because Joseph's life literally is just turned upside down by Jesus. Everything that Joseph had planned and imagined with this beautiful girl, Mary, that he was ready to marry, everything just got messed up and mixed up and turned upside down. Who has ever heard of a pregnant virgin? But Joseph believed God. And he took her, and he cared for her. He made her his wife. He protected her and this baby. And he was warned in a dream from God, don't go home. You go to Egypt. And so Joseph changed his course. And I think that that is what we're seeing pretty early here in Matthew as the real mark, the true mark of a disciple. That if we believe and acknowledge and confess who Jesus is and what he has done, and that he has made us a part of it, then we start changing our course. We start changing our direction. And we cooperate with God in what he is doing in the world through Jesus. And see, the Bible is full of men and women who made a course correction because of Jesus. Full of men and women who changed course because of a word from Jesus, because of an interaction from Jesus, because of a miracle from Jesus, because of a touch from Jesus. He has the ability and the power and the presence to look you in the eye and ask you to change course and go in a different direction. History is full of men and women who have changed their course because of Jesus. This church has men and women in this in this room who I know your stories. And you've changed a course. You've changed your course because of Jesus. As a church, as we take seriously being disciples who are making disciples, we are changing our course to cooperate with God in what He is doing in the world through Jesus. It's the mark of a disciple. And so I would ask you this morning to take some time as we remember Jesus' life and His death and His resurrection to respond to God. And I'd ask you to write this question in your journal. What course correction do you need to make as a disciple of Jesus? What course correction do you need to make? What new direction do you need to go? What change? What turn? What path? However you want to think about it. What course correction do you need to make? And during these next few minutes, as we reflect, during our time, as we take the bread and as we take the cup, today in your life group, as you meet and talk about this and pray about this, through the week, as you pray and as you read and as you journal, spend some time to answer that question. And I encourage you to be as specific as you can be. What course correction do you need to make as a disciple of Jesus because of who He is? Because of what He has done? And because He has invited you to be a part of it?